Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Pete and I are down the canal today. Even though it's still winter, it's a wonderful blue sky. It's actually very warm. They can feel the heat in the sun today, which is first time all winter, I think. The birds think it's spring, as you can hear. They're very vocal today all around us. And today we want to do part 10 of our Lao Tzu series. So we're going to start off by, Pete's going to read out the chapter, and then we will have a chat about it and see where we go.
We're actually on chapter 15. In ancient times, the leaders were as subtle as sorcerers. No one knew what they were about to do. How can we describe them to you? They were like soldiers about to cross a cold river, hesitant, watchful, and uncertain. They were cautious like people who know there is danger. They were over-polite like practiced guests. They gave way like ice melting. They were simple like uncarved wood. They were empty like deserted valleys. They were muddy like unreflecting water. The mud will settle, and it is hard to wait for it. But if you can, then you can act. If you follow the Tao without pretension, you will never burn yourself out.
Okay, so just before we move on with that, the reason why we're reading out chapter 15, but we're only on number 10. Of our own series, because occasionally we put two of the Lao Tzu chapters together. If we feel that they're very similar in what they're saying, we'll kind of meld them together into one podcast. So why there's a discrepancy. We're not doing it like just chapter by chapter.
Yeah,
I mean, just in case you got a bit confused.
Yeah,
there.
Very very often you find that Lao Tzu deals with a theme, and then in the next chapter it's quite a different theme, and he's got a number of themes that he keeps returning to, and he places them in a kind of a sandwich sort of thing, you know. So it actually makes sense where occasionally you get the same theme continued over one or two chapters to turn them into one podcast.
Yeah.
But it also makes sense to separate the themes for clarity,
yeah,
you know.
That's what we've been doing. So just coming to the first line in this then. When I, when we were doing our, what we call our pre-talk about this particular one, kind of just made me giggle a little bit, just when he says, in ancient times. I thought, blimey, you know, from our point of view, his time is ancient times. So what did he consider ancient times?
Yeah.
You know, and here we've got talking about these leaders that were subtle as sorcerers in this ancient time.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, what is it? What is this ancient time he's talking of?
Well, Lao Tzu is what we call a state of nature philosopher. And he tries to, certainly in this chapter, to put forward some political ideas about leading and ruling. By making reference to a time in the distant past, in fact, what we would call in Western philosophy a state of nature, in order to get some parameters. Now, Lao Tzu is one of those people that says there was a golden age in the deep past, and this is a myth. You know, I don't mean a myth in the sense of a lie. I mean a myth in the sense of a very deep archetypal pattern of thought that human beings avail themselves of very, very frequently. They have done so ever since. I mean, Plato did it. And, of course, these modern political philosophers, the last few hundred years, like John Locke and Thomas Hobbes and Rousseau, these are all state of nature philosophers, and they all do this thing of imagining a time ages ago and drawing some conclusions about it. Now,
he seems to be suggesting, just to butt in there, that in ancient times, according to him, it's like the way he's describing
yeah.
How these ancient sorcerer-like rulers, they were doing it an awful lot better than they were in his time.
Yeah, well, he thought that. He's like Rousseau in that respect, and unlike Hobbes in that respect. If you want to just get a handle on this state of nature idea, I did do a podcast last week called On the Uses and Abuses of the Concept of Nature. And I deal with a whole kind of swathe of ways in which the concept of nature is put to use in thought. And one of which is a discussion of this state of nature idea. But Rousseau was like Lao Tzu, and he thought that the state of nature was much better than the present. And it probably was, in some respects, better than his present, because he lived in the time of the Warring States, when in what we call China now, there was immense conflict between principalities and small states. The whole setup was in a state of civil war, really, or fragmentation. So he did have a nostalgia, and I dare say it was a popular trope in his day, given the conditions. Somebody like Hobbes, just to sort of show that the Golden Age myth isn't universal. I mean, somebody like Hobbes thought that in the state of nature, life was nasty, brutish and short. And that social life was just the war of all against all. People just fought each other all the time and didn't live very long. So Lao Tzu, yeah, he's got this view that not only was there an ideal time in the deep past, but also there was an ideal kind of ruler. Now it's interesting to us that somebody like Lao Tzu, who we've taken to be a mystic and a teacher of meditation and contemplation, should also be interested in politics. Because this is about ruling a state, ruling a country.
Well, some people consider this a political text, don't they?
Yeah, and I mean, over the years, I've kind of looked into quite a bit of the scholarship that's behind bringing Lao Tzu to the present age. And at least one commentator thinks that all the people who see the Lao Tzu as something mystical are just barking up the wrong tree, that there isn't a mystical word in it. It is actually a treatise on politics which is intended to be used by rulers as a source of advice and technique. Yeah? Now, I kind of don't agree. I think that it is quite obviously a meditation manual and a spiritual poem, as much as it is a political treatise. I think it's that as well. I think it is actually...
Yeah, why not? I mean, isn't he really doing a comment on everything?
It's a comment on life, the universe and everything, yeah. I mean,
it's going to be a bit restrictive just to be talking about just one thing.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, it's a modern view. If you go on social media pages amongst yogis and meditators and stuff like that, they hate politics. And they think that we should just distance ourselves from it as people who are interested in, inverted commas, spirituality.
I like the inverted commas there.
It's a common view that we have to rise above it because it's dirty. We don't get our hands dirty with that stuff, you know. The other day, somebody commented on one of the Facebook pages. It's one of the rare occasions that I look. somebody commented, "We should just like not be worrying about this stuff. We should just meditate more. Just get on your meditation cushion."
While the world burns around us.
Yeah. Well, I actually wrote my I put a little riposte there, and I said, "Ostrich posture is not an option." That was my thing. Actually, I think that there is a definite connection, and Lao Tzu is saying there's a definite connection, and what he's he's making his assertion on the terrain of the notion that a leader or a ruler or an emperor or whatever, but or somebody in a position of influence over the way society develops, should have a certain character, that there are demands on character. Because notice, he's talking about ancient times, and then his next thing is, the leaders were as subtle as sorcerers. He's telling us how these really good rulers were like.
Yeah.
What they were like as characters.
Yeah.
And I think that is right. I think we are entitled to ask questions of the character of those who would influence the our lives, of those who would wield power, and of those who would have an influence on the way society develops into the future. I think we're entitled to do that, despite the fact that there is a logical fallacy called argumentum ad hominem, you know, which says you shouldn't argue from the man. But what would it
describe? What you mean by that?
Argumentum ad hominem is a logical fallacy, and it says that a statement is true regardless of who utters it, but only in regard of whether it corresponds with something.
Whoever utters it,
yeah.
Yeah.
One and one is two if Hitler says it. So the fact that Hitler said it has no bearing on its truth or falsehood. Yeah.
Right.
And of course people do, in argument, they attack.
The argument, because I think the person's not very reputable.
They attack the man rather than the argument.
Yeah.
But the argument stands or falls. If it's a true argument on its own.
Yeah.
Right, so... But this isn't about that, you know. This actually, what Lao Tzu is doing here, he's not doing an ad hominem attack on the rulers of his own age by pointing out their inadequacy in contrast to the great men of old.
Yeah.
You know, because this is about the fact that character matters when it comes to those who would influence the rest of us, and those who would influence the human future.
Yeah.
And he's saying that, well, if the gist of this whole thing is, you know, these true men of old who were great rulers, they meditated, they attempted and succeeded in finding some accord with the Tao. So that's what this is about. It is political, but it brings politics and meditation and character and strategy for ruling or leading together into one picture. And I think it's kind of rather marvellous for that.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I am critical of state and nature arguments. But Lao Tzu didn't know any better. I'm talking with hindsight, you know, 2,500 years down the line. So... I think we can still run with it, yeah?
Yeah.
So, in ancient times, the leaders were as subtle as sorcerers. No one knew what they were about to do. So how can we describe them to you? Well, I mean, subtle as sorcerers.
Interesting choice of words.
It's great, isn't it?
Sorcerers. Yeah.
I think that's a fairly poetic... It's a fairly loose translation.
So yeah, I was just going to say that. I mean, is that like sorcerers? Is that, yeah?
It's a bit loose.
Yeah.
It's a bit loose from looking at other translations. And no one knew what they were about to do. So you can kind of think that maybe they're very manipulative by disguising their intentions. But I think as we work through this, we'll find that that is not what he's suggesting. This is advice to rulers. And it makes rulers look very impenetrable to those they would rule. Maybe a bit strange, but it's not Machiavellian. You know, Niccolo Machiavelli in the Renaissance wrote a famous book called The Prince, which is, it's in the same vein, it's advice to rulers. But Machiavelli recommends scheming and plotting and being two-faced and lying to people and in order to get your own way. It's just like master of manipulation and delineates all the modes that a ruler can use to manipulate to get his own way. This isn't like that. Even though we do not know what these rulers of old will do. They're very, very opaque to people around them. They're subtle as sorcerers. This reminds me of Terence McKenna talking about when he'd go to these villages in the rainforest looking for the shaman. And they'd land up in a village in a canoe somewhere in the upper reaches of the Amazon, him and his brother. And all the people in the village would come round and want to shake their hand and look at them and talk to them. You know, and they were all very excited about having visitors. But the shaman wouldn't appear. And you'd go into the village, you'd see them skulking behind a hut. You know, just like looking and a bit suspicious, poking their head round.
Yeah.
And he said, you know that guy was the shaman. That guy was the sorcerer.
Yeah.
You know, kept out the way. He's a bit strange. He's not like everybody else. And this is what he's getting at. And McKenna, he tells like similar stories when he would go to into the outback in Australia to hang out with Aborigines. And they called their sorcerers or their shaman clever fellas. He was known as he could go into a village and say, "Where's the clever fella?" And it was the one who didn't appear, you know?
Yeah.
The one who was a bit kind of like shy.
Yeah.
And it's because, don't know, sound a bit, I don't know what, elitist or strange or something, but in those contexts, people who are a bit different and who are clever, you know, in the true sense of the word, do kind of have to protect themselves, you know. They have to be a bit guarded. They just have to be. Mm. Well, I don't think it's that much different now, to be honest with you. So, how can we describe them to you? And I love this next bit. They were like soldiers about to cross a cold river, hesitant, watchful and uncertain. And I find this very vivid, because I've done that when I've been off trekking in the middle of nowhere. when occasionally you've come to a stream or a river, and you've got the only way across really is to take your boots off and to wade across. And usually, if you're off up in the Welsh Mountains or something, the water's it's freezing cold, and then the current can be quite strong. And if you misstep, it'll knock you over. And also, like the boulders and the rocks, they're either sharp or they're a bit slimy and you slip and you kind of really, you have to be very, very aware not to come a cropper. And this little picture that he gives us here of this ruler is of somebody like that. And I suppose, you know, like...
So every action's very deliberate.
Yeah,
and they're testing. Careful
and full of awareness.
Yeah.
They're full of awareness of all the subtleties and nuances.
Yeah.
Of the novel position that they're in.
And particularly aware of consequences of their actions.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
You know, put a foot wrong and you kind of sweat off by the river.
Yeah. So I mean, of course, what you do is you don't rush, because you can't, do you? You don't rush, do you?
If there was going to be a criticism I'd make of our rulers is. They either have a good idea of the consequences, their actions are going to be awful for the country and they just don't care, or they actually are not aware of the awful consequences of their actions.
Yeah. Well, this picture of a ruler is a million, trillion, gazillion miles away from our politicians.
Who
are always in a rush.
Yeah.
Who don't have great foresight.
Yeah. And are very, very, very much motivated by their... by their consciousness,
absolutely.
By what people think of them, and they're just focused on the next election and how good they look in a suit, and you know how famous they are,
there's a lot of egotism and stuff in
politics. You know,
they put
all their energy on winning the next election without actually having any basis to win the next election.
Yeah, and probably just running with like one sort of very unsubtle idea. You know, like the market is great; it will solve all
strong
our problems.
Stable.
Yeah, or, yeah, that's it. They don't get
just repeat that. Just repeat that 2 billion times.
It doesn't get out of the realm of memes, slogans, and fucking hunger for power.
Yeah.
But anyway, what does Lao Tzu say next about these wallahs? He says, these clever fellas. He says they were cautious, like people who knew there is danger. Well, of course, you know, then he's crossing the stream, you know, and it is like that. And one would appreciate that kind of. That caring a politician, you know, in a modern politician.
Yeah.
And also that shyness, perhaps, you know. And she says, they gave way like ice melting. There's a certain yielding character to it.
Yeah.
This is a bit like the ice
not
goodies.
Stick to their guns, even if the guns turn out to be complete crap.
Yeah. You know. It's not meeting force with force. You will die. You know, if you do. So there's a kind of a yieldingness to it. And I think that means also, like, that suggests to me receptivity.
Yeah. Being able to roll with the changes, you know, new information comes in or new events happen. Instead of just forging ahead regardless, they're taking into account what's going on and alter their route a little bit.
That's right, yeah. And that, and but also with, like, they're getting a lot of information because they're very receptive.
Yeah.
If you live in a world of slogans and shouting and crude ideas, you're automatically reducing your sensitivity, and therefore the ability to take in a very wide range of subtle information. And you can only make decisions, and you can only act on the basis of information. And he's telling us actually through a kind of receptivity that we will get lots of information. We'll see things that other people miss. And this is reinforced by the next line. They were simple like uncarved wood. They were empty like deserted valleys. They were muddy like unreflecting water. This is the kind of quiet consciousness that we mention in every one of the podcasts we do on the Lao Tzu, because he always brings us back to it. But he's saying that quiet consciousness is very, very practical for people who have the responsibility of influencing the human future. And of acting as the pilot of a society as it moves forward into the future. And that is, it's really just all in there in those three lines. And I'm going to love it. Simple like uncarved wood. It's like it's just a lump of wood, a branch, rather than something that's been carved into a sculpture. You know, they haven't been programmed. They're just in their original state, they sometimes say, you know, this uncarved block. But that is a very receptive consciousness, and that's a very simple and upright character, I would say, as well.
Not to be confused with, like, simple as in stupid.
No, this is intelligence. This is very great intelligence. And what it is, what he's talking about, is the intelligence of receptivity in the midst of change and in the midst of very difficult tasks and in the midst of danger. What do you need? You need sensitivity so that you know what's going on and then you're able to do something. This is what this is about. And that comes through the Taoist meditation, with its profound sense of letting be and its profound openness to what's going on around you. Okay, he goes on, he says, the mud will settle, and it is hard to wait for it, but if you can, then you can act. Again, no rush. Eventually the mud will settle and you'll be able to see. You'll have some clarity, you'll see down to the bottom of the bottom of the stream or the bottom of the pond. And so you will know what's going on underneath. But you can't force the mud to settle. Well, you can wait. So he's telling us there's a time for waiting. And there's a great use and virtue in patience. And I think he's suggesting there's also a skill in knowing when to wait and when to do something. There's timing, again, timing is... we'll come across this again and again in the Lao Tzu. on the practical level, timing is what you need. And then the last line, he says, if you follow the Tao without pretension, you will never burn yourself out. And I think this is how Lao Tzu is just vastly different from Machiavelli. You follow the Tao without pretension. This clever fella, he's quite a strange waller, he's quite shy. Never seems to be in a rush. Willing to wait politically, even though there might be a clamour to do something. But he won't do something until the moment of maximum effectiveness just arises out of the changing conditions of life and the world. And he's unpretentious because he's not putting on a face for public consumption. Or he's not putting on a face for the people he has to deal with. He's not trying to outwit anybody. And so even though he does look like a strange person who conceals this, there is no ulterior motive behind it. This is simply somebody who's in the Tao. This is what they're like, a shy. But he recommends it. He says, if you follow the Tao without pretension, you will never burn yourself out. Well, of course, leaders burn themselves out. Now, they have quite a short lifespan in the modern world. And in fact, high office in most countries is restricted on how long it can be held. I don't think we have it in this country. I mean, Tony Blair did 3 terms, didn't he? Something like that. But in the US, the president can only serve 2 terms, and a lot of countries have that kind of thing because the pressure is too much. Mm. And we know the modern world's a bit different from a small principality in China 2.5 millennia ago.
World, any leader of, well, any country needs to be taken into account what's happening in the whole of the rest of the world all the time. Because it always will have effect on your country.
Yeah.
There's so much more data to be processed now.
Yeah. I wouldn't speak.
Than really if it was only really your country with the maybe occasional invasion of just say one neighbouring country rather than the whole of the rest of the world who could nuke you from from the other side of the world or from space or something, you know?
Yeah. And just the speed of everything.
Yeah, things can happen a lot faster now than ever, probably. Yeah.
Everything's a trillion times more intense, isn't it? But nevertheless, if anybody influential is listening to this, why don't you just give this a whirl?
Yeah. Okay, so that about wraps it up, I think. So I hope that was useful, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening.